into Rooney. Wayne Rooney, magnificent. What a goal. Park's there. He only scores in important games. Oh, what a save. That's a magnificent save by Van der Sar. Scholes is there. Can you believe it?
It's the red letter day at Wembley. And United create history.
Welcome to the new Manchester United podcast. We'll be here every week to discuss all things United. I'm Stuart Gardner from MUTV, and joining me from manunited.com is Steve Bartram, Ben Hibbs and Paul Davis. Welcome, chaps. The first thing we need to talk about is the news that's broken today that Rio Ferdinand makes his return for the reserves tonight, and that is ahead of the original schedule, Steve, isn't it?
Absolutely. Fantastic to have him back. I mean, Johnny Evans has done very well in his absence, but you can't beat having Rio and Nemanja back in the heart of defence together.
We thought Benny was going to be out until, well, the end of September, perhaps, and you never quite know when he was going to come back, but it looks like he'll be back much sooner than we originally anticipated.
Yeah, it's a huge bonus, I think. I mean, everyone realises the quality of having Rio and Vidic together in the defence. I think Vidic made the point himself that he's, you know, he's looking forward to having Rio back in the team. They've got that understanding together that you know, there's a real sort of foundation for the team, defensive sort of foundation.
Paul, I mean, he has been missed, isn't he? There's no getting away from it. He has missed a lot of football in the last 18 months, 2 years, and he has been missed when he hasn't played.
He has. I think we've been lucky that we've got Johnny Evans to step in and give a sort of decent level of stability. But I think that with Rio, he brings you something completely different at the back. He brings you a sort of real assurance that just solid, that strengthens up the whole of the back line and gives a sort of base for the rest of the team to build from.
The Vidic and Ferdinand partnership, and how important was that for United over the last, well, a couple of seasons ago when we sort of won everything? I mean, that was really the bedrock of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it still irks me that that season that we won Champions League in 2008, that John Terry was voted UEFA Defender of the Year.
He always seems to win it, despite being knocked out.
It's ridiculous, because I think that, I mean, I didn't think there was a better player, better defender in the world than Rio. And perfect partner alongside him in Vidic. It's just the ideal partnership, really.
We saw the strength of the reserve team a week ago. It was probably the strongest reserve team that's ever been played for Manchester United. I mean, maybe that shows the strength of the squad. We're going to go and touch on the transfer window in a moment, but the fact that nobody came in shows perhaps the squad didn't really need to be added to.
Maybe we should follow the Barcelona line and go for a Barca B. They've got up their own Barca B team who are going up through the divisions. Maybe we should have a United B team that do the same thing. But I think they're going to. Our Carling Cup team's looking pretty strong for this season.
Perhaps we should call it. Was it the elite squad City call their reserves? Perhaps we should call it that. I mean, let's talk about the transfer window, because really not much business done here, Steve. I mean, Tom Cleverley out was the big one on loan, but nobody really in. No surprises there, do you think?
No, I think we've touched on already. We've got a very strong squad. It didn't stop the tabloids having a little bit of conjecture, of course. I've got a stat here that we were linked with 106 players over the course of the window for a total of £1.87 billion. And Bebby wasn't amongst them.
No.
Which sort of shows you just how accurate they can be.
Although, on the very eve of the window, in a few papers said United were going to try and sign Jack Rodwell in a swap deal plus £10 million for Michael Carrick. I think that came out of left field, didn't it? Not the Rodwell link, because we've been linked with Rodwell before, but the Carrick and £10 million. It makes you wonder where that came from.
Well, I mean, you know, I'd be disappointed to see Carrick go. And I don't think that he will. I think in the last few seasons, the midfield's kind of been built around his passing. I don't think he's consistently maybe hit the form that he would like to over the last season or two, but you know, I still think he's got plenty to offer, so I don't think I'd want to see him leave. Rodwell would be, you know, he's a great talent, he's got a big future, but yeah, I don't necessarily see that we need to lose anyone.
Would you agree with that? Would you be sad to see Carrick leave?
I think I would. I think that the one thing you can guarantee with him is that he'll pick out, you know, three or four passes a season that nobody else would, that will create something. I think that Rodwell has got a lot of potential, and that's obviously the type of player we're always looking at. But in terms of whether we should have gone for something like a deal, whether we would have, you know, gone in opposite directions, I'm not convinced that that would have been necessarily the right time for it to happen for us. I think Carrick's got something to offer. I'm not sure Rodwell's there yet. So
yeah, there's an awful lot of hype around Rodwell at the minute in the press, and he's not achieved that much as yet.
No.
I think we should bear in mind. He's obviously got a lot of talent, the lad, but he's what, 18?
19,
I mean, the interesting thing in the window is that really our main rivals, Chelsea, Arsenal, didn't really do much either, did they? I mean, it's only City were the ones who made the headlines, albeit more in selling Rubinho than bringing anyone in on deadline day. But it was interesting, there wasn't really the sort of panicked rush for the big four that you might have seen in the past.
Yeah, I think Arsenal not bringing in a goalkeeper could probably come back to haunt them. I think that's widely accepted. It's just bizarre. They've got all the foundations there for a really good season, except the goalkeeper, which is massive for them.
Yeah. I mean, you agree with that? Almunia, is he up to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at how important Edwin is for us and you know, Cech's been for Chelsea, it shows you the value of having a top quality goalkeeper, and that's definitely a weakness. The fact that they've been looking at Schwarzer suggests that they need someone, they want to bring someone else in.
I always think Schwarzer's not that good, though. Not bad, but is he good enough to be, a top three, top four goalkeeper?
Yeah. If you've got Almunia in goal, he might be a step up from there, to be honest. I think he's steady, nothing more, and that's probably what they're looking for.
Mm. What about the departure of Rubinho? I suppose that was the big headline sort of deal. They've lost a few quid on him, but it doesn't really matter, does it, at Eastlands?
Doesn't appear to matter, no. And I think Mancini seems to have his own way of doing things. He seems to have his own players in mind, although how many of those were brought in, I'm not sure. City are going through a whole phase here of trying to bed in a lot of players at the same time, and Rubinho never really settled. So obviously they just think best to close the door on that one and say goodbye.
I think it was mission accomplished for him, really, though, because he was there to signify the start of a new era and sort of open the floodgates for all these big names coming in. He did that. The fact that he achieved nothing beyond there doesn't really matter, because he's gone and a lot of players have sort of followed his footsteps.
This is an extraordinary Ibrahimovic deal as well. I mean, Barcelona lost. I mean, I would like to say what they've lost on that. A huge amount of money on that. Him going to Milan as well. Mm. So it's going to be interesting in Milan this year, isn't it, with Ronaldinho and Rubinho and Ibrahimovic.
I know. How do you keep all those players happy? Similar sort of thing at City, though. They've just got, they've got so many players. It's not, I don't think they're necessarily, it doesn't seem to me that they're building, with a really rigid structure like Mourinho did when he was at Chelsea. He came in and I think he was quite strict on how many players he had and players in each position. But I think that City have got, their job is trying to keep everyone happy and trying to fit them all in one team.
Let's talk about the season so far. So we've reached this sort of mini break after three games, 7 points from three games. Are we being greedy and thinking, God, it should have been nine?
No, it should have been, to be honest. You don't often see United concede points late on in games like that. It's very sloppy for us, but all told, we've got some silverware in the bag. We've got 7 points from three games, and Fulham's not an easy place to go. Come the end of the season, you may lock on that as a point gained, possibly.
Yeah, Giggs said, after the two defeats we've had there in the last 2 years, we're making an improvement.
Yeah, it is galling to have conceded so late on and dropped the 2 points, but the bigger picture, it's not a bad result. An increasingly difficult place to go.
Yeah. We missed a penalty in the equivalent fixture last year. We also missed a penalty. We ended up losing to Burnley. This time we got a point at Fulham. That's probably not a bad return. It might, it could have been better, but I think when we look back, we'll be pleased, I think.
It's difficult to tell with quite a few players to come back. We talked about Rio and Anderson, players like that, that could come in and add something to the squad. But
I suppose the concern is that Chelsea look strong, don't they? I mean, you can't really see them dropping many cheap points this season. Is that a concern that every point you drop could be a pretty painful one?
Our squad is stronger this year, so I think that we will do better in the games against the bigger sides. So I think that's somewhere where we will improve ourselves. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Chelsea do look strong, but I think they're not really made massive improvements on last year. So I think it's for them, it's the same as last year. We're only a point behind them in the league. So I think if we can make small increments in certain games, I think we'd be right up there challenging them again.
I think the thing with Chelsea is that they haven't played anyone yet.
No.
The teams they've played haven't been anyone that you would expect them to drop points against, and I don't think they do for at least another three or four matches. I think it will come down to how we do against them. I think Ben's right. I think it's whether we can
get a result against them, and we were very unlucky twice last year against them. I think we're due to change of luck. So
The fact they've bashed in 12 goals in two games doesn't particularly matter. It sort of muddies the water in the sense that United have made a really strong start as well. We're scoring a lot more goals.
I love the fact United are under the radar there, that all the attention's on the other teams. I love that, because that's the way United have always been. It's kind of just stay in the race and then go for it, you know, go for the sprint finish. And it nearly paid off last year. It paid off for 3 years before, and I think we'll do the same thing again.
I know we've only had three games. It is too early to draw too many conclusions, but are we going to be looking at United and Chelsea as the two predominant teams, or are we going to see Arsenal stay the course, and are we going to see City as genuine title challengers? What do you think from what we've seen so far?
I don't think you can discount City as yet. I mean, they've brought in a lot of new people and they're going to have to bed down, but it's built on a foundation of a very solid defence. Obviously under Mancini, that's his hallmark. With all the talent they've got, it's just a matter of time before everything gels, really. I mean, much as it pains us all to admit it, I'm sure no one can see past City being a major challenger for years.
Top four, certainly, this season, do you
think? I think top four. I still think that they've got the issue of having a settled team, and I think they'll drop points and they'll have defeats dotted around through the season. I think they'll also hammer teams, but I still think United, Chelsea, probably Arsenal, City very close, third and fourth behind them.
Are Arsenal going to do what they always do and look good and thrash teams? And when it comes to the crunch, though, they just won't be able to quite make
it. I think so. I think we've already mentioned Almunia. I think that you can't rely on him in the biggest games, because he's kind of either his temperament or his technique aren't quite right, and he makes mistakes, and the best teams punish those mistakes, and I think that's where they'll drop points. I think they'll flat track bully everyone else like they do at the Emirates. They'll just go and wallop 5 or 6 goals past some teams, and everyone will think amazing, they're going to win the league, and then they'll fall short again. I think they'll probably drop out in April like they always do.
Liverpool, I mean, finished 7th last time. They've had a mixed start to the season. It's strange to have a Liverpool manager you don't dislike, isn't it?
Yeah, I liked Roy Hodgson before he went there, and it's hard to dislike him too much, but yeah, I still don't think that they've quite got the balance right in their side to really sort of push on. I think he will do well for them. I think he'll do better than Benitez, unfortunately.
Losing Mascherano was an absolutely immense blow for them, though.
Yeah.
Huge. He kept the teams together last year.
Yeah.
To an extent.
His wife didn't like it on Merseyside. Preferred a trip to Barcelona, and who wouldn't? Mm. Who have been, do you think, the outstanding performers for United so far? I'm going to take Skulls and Gigs out of this, because they're a separate section to discuss, but maybe a couple of players who... Sometimes, certainly on MUTV, have taken some stick in post-match phone-ins. Berbatov and Nani seems to have come to the fore early on.
We did a sort of programme, Talking Point, in United Review, where we picked out a player that we thought would do well this season, and I said Nani, just because the way he finished last season. I'm pleased with the way he started the season. I think he'd be a big player for us. But same with Berbatov. I'm a big fan of his, and I think he can affect games. I think he just needs that bit of confidence that he maybe lacked a little bit towards the end of last season.
Just a lot more confident, doesn't he? It just makes such a difference in his play. He looks happier and more settled.
Yeah.
I think with Berbatov is, though, as well, that it's the big games. Old Trafford, where he's always done quite well. It's away from home that you want to see him make that step up, and against the biggest teams as well. And so I think the jury's out on him still. I think as much as I like him and admire him as a player, I just think that it's too early to say whether he's going to be a different player for us this season.
And in terms of players that started the season well, I think you have to mention Vidic. The performance on Saturday against West Ham, it was absolutely flawless as a centre-back. Fantastic.
It was outstanding against Carlton Cole, who I must say I'm not the biggest fan of, but he's quite a difficult person to mark, big and strong and quick.
Yeah. I mean, that probably helped come in so soon after playing Zamora, because Cole is essentially a poor man Zamora, isn't he? But he just didn't give him anything.
No, absolutely.
After all the hype and talk about him being unhappy here and moving away that went through last season, to actually have him sign on and stay on again, it's been
that was the best signing of the summer, probably, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely unbelievable. And we've got to talk about Scholes and Giggs, because you just have to. He can't not have good performances. But back of your mind, you think, how on earth are they going to be replaced in the very, very short future? And Van der Sar as well, but let's talk about Scholes and Giggs. What, at the back of your mind, you think these guys are still dominating when they play? What are we going to do in a couple of years' time?
I can't I'd be surprised if they both retired at the end of the season. I still think they might get another year out of them. Just the way that they're playing. I mean, as long as you look after them, not, you're not sort of playing them every week, which the manager is good at doing, then I don't see why they can't carry on. It does. We have definitely got an issue in trying to replace them. Although I think Nani and Valencia out wide, we've got two good players that can you know, that fill those positions. I think the manager mentioned it in his programme notes. Scholes is he's a really unique talent as well that's very difficult to replace. That might be the problem for us.
Is the problem, is it almost like saying, you know, like trying to replace Bobby Charlton and Dennis Law? Is it like that? Is it you just can't really replace? They're just special players who come around once in a sort of generation, I suppose. Just be, you can't really replace them, so there's no point in talking about replacing.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few different players down the years.
Not that many. I think that that if you try and replace them like for like, it's almost impossible. So I think the only way you can do it, and the manager's been absolutely magnificent at doing this over the years, is replace them as a, you know, reshape your team almost. And I think if you tried to, if you took them out of the team now, yeah, we'd have a problem. But if you think in like 12 months' time, the, with the developing Nani and maybe Valencia coming on as well, and someone coming through the midfield, maybe it'd be Anderson, or if we were to go into the transfer market and sort of rejig our midfield, then You might not miss them as much, but I think right now it'll be a problem. But in the future, I think the manager, this will be uppermost in his mind, I think.
It's about the balance of the team, isn't it? You don't, like, we didn't replace Keane like for like. You can't replace Cantona. You just look for different players have bring other qualities to the team, and you have to just get the balance of the team right.
The whole thing just evolves.
Yeah,
I think the key thing as well could be keeping them on after they finish playing.
Yeah,
because it's as much of an influence at Carrington behind the scenes as anything. I mean, the natural born winners, and that will rub off on the people around them, and it has done.
Has there ever been a greater role model than Ryan Giggs as a footballer to a young footballer coming up through this club? I doubt it, to be honest.
They've got no right to be so good at 35, 36, are they still running games of Premier League football? It's amazing.
I mean, the two of them together have got to be up there amongst the very, very best players that we've had in the history of the club now, just for professionalism, their ability, what they've achieved, and the fact they've done it over so long. And the fact the Scholes got asthma as well. Yeah. It's ludicrous.
That pass against West Ham to Giggs, and then the perfect control just
on a wet pitch.
Yeah, that just sort of summed it up, really, didn't it?
Will there be a statue of those two at some point, do you think? Well,
won't be able to move.
You must also mention the goal drought that was ended at the weekend. I got absolutely slaughtered for saying it was an alleged goal drought, because all sorts of games were in there, England friendlies and stuff. I didn't think there was any but four league games which he hadn't scored in. He obviously wasn't fit in a lot of those, so I wasn't really going for that anyway. But I got slaughtered for saying it was an alleged goal drought. But to me, it was, you know, I never thought to myself, God, you know, he's never going to score again.
No, I mean, he picked up the injury at the end of last season, and then obviously wasn't fully fit. He was in and out of the team, getting substituted midway through games. Then he had the World Cup, still, you would think, not fully fit. A whole debacle there, not fitting into the team. And, you know, every game that goes along, he might not be chalking it up, but other people are chalking it up for him. And then they present these facts saying, oh, you know, it's
Breaking it down into minutes, seconds, hours, weeks, you know.
Exactly.
What got me with England as well is Rooney just had the season of his life
playing
up front in a 4-5-1. And then they stick him up front with Emil Heskey in a 4-4-2. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. If you're going to think, if you're going to talk about, you know, why people aren't scoring, then I would suggest that is one of the reasons.
But he did look, his all-round performance looked a little bit more like it than the old Wayne Rooney on Saturday.
Yeah, it's like my feeling said he came back a bit dishevelled from it all. And with the media storm that followed it, you couldn't help it be affected by everything. And when he first came back from Newcastle, he looked off the pace. He looked like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders. You know, every pass was going short, every shot was being scuffed wide. But it was just more like it on Saturday, just all over the show, running, pinging passes, having shots. Just not there yet, but
you know when Rooney's happy for the ground he covers on the pitch. Yeah. You can tell by just, you know, he's kicking heels and chasing people down and, you know, wanting to win every tackle on the pitch. And he looked a bit more like that on Saturday.
And he's never been one to really start the season on fire anyway.
Mm. One of the things we've got no concerns about is Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, isn't it, really?
Before we go, I must just mention Thursday night, 9 o'clock MUTV, Paddy Crerin interviews Scholes and Giggs. That is not to be missed under any circumstances.
Yeah, I was asking him about this. He said that he's not the new Parkinson.
No, he's not. Bear in mind, on the day of the interview, I spoke to him over breakfast about what questions were you going to ask it. and he wrote them down on a napkin. So he's interviewed two legends of the game with questions written on the back of a napkin.
So your job's safe then?
Yeah, well, I think for the time being. But that's it. That is it from us. I hope you enjoyed this first United podcast, and we'll be back next week and every week. Bye for now.